Church, glad to see you guys here this morning. Over the last 34 weeks, all right, we have been walking through as a church family the story of Jesus. And next week, we're going to wrap all this up. I know I've talked to you over the last 8 months. I've talked to many of you guys about the series and kind of the thing that I feel like I've heard over and over and over again is we all get the beginning, Christmas, all right? We all get what happens at the end, Easter. It's the stuff in the middle that a lot of us are like, I didn't know that happened. All right, I've heard you guys say, I didn't know he said that. I didn't know he did that. I didn't know this went down. I didn't know it went down like that. It's just all these things. See, there's something in us or there's some part of us that we all love a good story. I mean, that's why some of you guys are really into your books, okay? Or you really like movies. That's why we got to finish our Netflix series even if we're not enjoying it, just because we got to finish it because we want to know how the story ends. Like, that's, we're all the same in that. And so what we have in the New Testament is that we have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, who are all documenting the same story, right? It's the story that we've all heard of. It's God came down. He lived a perfect life. He gathered up some followers. He said a bunch of good things. He did a bunch of incredible things. And then eventually he was betrayed and arrested and then put to death. And he was put to death because he claimed to be God, but he didn't stay dead. He came back. Like, it's the story that we've all heard. And so Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they all tell the same story, but each guy gives different details. I mean, it'd be the same for you. If you, let's say, went to a movie this afternoon, or let's say a few of you guys went to a movie this afternoon, and so I saw you, you know, we ran into each other at Walmart or something, and so I'm like, hey, how was the movie? I'm not planning on going seeing it. Why don't you just tell me what happened, okay? Each person that I ask, you guys would all give me the same storyline, but you would emphasize different parts of the story. You'd emphasize different details, and so that's how it is really in what we call the Gospels, in these guys' accounts. Picture it like this. A few years ago, I used to run our Kalahari Retreat. Okay, a lot of you guys are familiar with this. If you don't know what that is, our Kalahari Retreat is one of the best things that our church does, 100%. We do it up at the Kalahari Indoor Water Park up in Sandusky, big kind of resort up there, and it's for our middle school and our high school students. And we've been doing this for a long time. Our church is the one that kind of runs this. And a few years ago, I mean, at one point, we had 2,600 students and adult leaders from 5 different states. It's a lot of work, and it's a really big deal. And so a few years ago, Tiffin Campus was starting, and so I knew I kind of had to pass this lovely box of joy along to somebody else to do, and which I will admit that I was pleased to do that. And so I passed it along to Pastor Mike and Pastor Luke, all right? And so I decided, hey, we need to kind of get them introduced to some of the players at Kalahari, some of the people who can get things done up at the resort. And so I brought them to this, what we call a pre-con meeting, okay? That's like pre-convention thing that they always set up with all their groups. And so I brought them to that, and I remember, you know, I'm like kind of stressed. I'm like, dude, we got to make a good first impression with you guys. Like, these guys can make or break the retreat. You need to be on their good side. It's like all that kind of thing. These are like the top people within the resort. And so we go there, and Mike had his backpack. That was one thing that still kind of bothers me to this day. I'm like, dude, you look like a college kid. That's not the look we're going for here. It's not cool. We're going for, you know, control, like professional. That's what we're looking for. And so we walk into this boardroom. They're all waiting for us, all right? It's a big conference room table. Everybody's in suits. They got the fancy little desserts at each place, which is awesome. And then everybody is like at attention behind their leather seat, all right, waiting for us to come in. And so we walk in, and the general manager comes. He's the top guy. He comes and he introduces himself to both Mike and Luke. And I'm kind of, you know, saying, hey, this is Mike and Luke. They're going to be taking over. And so he shows us where we are to sit. And then he introduces us, I think, to one more person next to him. But then he says, hey, before we go around, instead of going around the table and introducing everybody, you know, with these two new guys that they didn't know, he says, why don't we just sit at our seats, at which we were at the head of the table. Why don't you guys just sit at your seats? And then we will go around and introduce ourselves and tell you kind of what we're in charge of and what we do, which sounds like a pretty good idea. All right, that's going to save a bunch of time. And so I'm like, all right, sounds good. And Mike blows past the guy. Okay, and so he goes around the guy, and he starts introducing himself to every single person. He's like, hey, I'm Mike Miller. Okay, nice to meet you. He goes to the next person. Hey, my name's Mike Miller. What's your name? Oh, okay, all right, that's cool. All right, nice, you know, nice tie. Okay, moving on. Hey, I'm Mike Miller. He goes, and he starts doing that, and I'm like, no. The guy literally just said, let's not do this. And there goes Mike. And Luke followed him. And I was just like, no, what are they doing? And he just completely ignores what the guy says. I remember, and there's like, I don't know, 12 or 14 people, okay, around this table. So it takes like minutes, you know? And we're all just standing there waiting patiently as Mike and Luke slowly make their way around the room and around the table. And I remember the general manager looking at me, and it's kind of like the look of like, this is what you got? These guys, you know? And I'm just like, yeah, that's what's going on. And so it's like that, telling a story. Like if you were to go ask Mike how that all went down, you would get the same story, because that's what happened, unfortunately. I got to watch the whole thing, all right? But he would give you slightly different details. See, he would tell you, well, I didn't hear the guy say that. All right, I was just trying to be nice. He told me this week, he's like, I blacked out. I was just so nervous. I didn't know what to do. And so I was like, I'll just do the nicest thing. I'll go and say hi to everybody. And so he went and did that without thinking. And if you were to ask Luke, you'd be like, you know, Luke would tell you, well, I was just doing what Mike did. I don't know. I was just following him. I was third in line. So I was just doing what he did. That's what Luke would say. See, that's how it is with what we call the Gospels. With Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, each of them documented what happened with this Jesus guy, but they detail it in different ways. And so the question that you should think about is this. Is Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John a reliable account of actual events? Like, that's the question, right? I mean, think about it. When it comes to Christianity, that's really maybe one of the foundational questions that we could possibly ask. Because think about it. If they are reliable accounts of actual events, like if they are, then what they say about Jesus logically has to be true. And if what they say about Jesus is true, then you should lean in and you should pay attention to what they have to say, regardless of what you believe, regardless of your background, regardless of your experiences. You should lean in and pay attention to the story. See, last week we left off with Jesus' body hanging on a cross, and he has just died. And everybody is staring because there's this huge crowd. They've all watched it happen. And in the back are some of Jesus' followers. They're watching in disbelief. And most of the followers at this point in the story, they had left the city. They had ran thinking that they might be next. And so what do we have, right? We have no Christians in this moment. There are no believers. There's nobody going, oh, it's going to be okay. Right? They just watched the religious leaders murder the best person that they'd ever known, a man who they thought was God, who wasn't supposed to die, who was supposed to be king. But in less than 24 hours, he had been arrested, found guilty, and then killed, which wasn't supposed to happen. All right? That's not how it was supposed to go down. And they are in shock, and this for them was completely unexpected. I mean, just a day before, the disciples thought that that Jesus was going to be crowned king. I mean, throughout this entire week, remember, there are hundreds of thousands of extra people in Jerusalem, in the main city, for this festival called Passover that's going on. And so they think that Jesus is going to be crowned king during this week. I mean, do you remember how Jesus entered Jerusalem at the beginning of the week? Right? He's riding in, and everybody's claiming him as king. Everybody's like, you're our future king, all right? This is awesome. And they all thought that they were winning. And now it's all over. Last 2 to 3 years for them, hanging out with Jesus has been a complete waste. And as the crowd began to leave, a few disciples were left staring at his body, and they knew what was going to happen next. See, usually the Romans who did these crucifixions and stuff, they were the ones in charge. They were the government. They were the authority. Usually they would pull down the bodies, and they'd just throw them into a dump, all right? And the bodies would rot. That's how they would go, all right? But for a price, you could bribe the soldiers for a body, and then you could bury that body, right? And so Luke documents for us that a man named Joseph, who actually was a religious leader, he's actually part of the group that ultimately pushed for Jesus' death. He was one of the few men in that group that was actually a Jesus sympathizer that got overruled by the majority within the group. And so he bypasses the soldiers. He goes straight to the governor, this dude named Pilate, and he asks for Jesus' body so that he could give Jesus a proper burial. John, he tells us, because he gives us slightly different details. John tells us that a guy named Nicodemus, who is also a well-respected religious leader, he went with Joseph and to Pilate. And Pilate allows them to take Jesus' body, and the two of them together, they wrap up Jesus' body and they place it in Joseph's own tomb. John tells us that they did this because they were secret followers of Jesus. But because of their position and their status and their reputation, they kept it secret. But they believed. I mean, at one point, they believed that Jesus was the promised king. But now, clearly he wasn't. Clearly that wasn't true. But he was still a good guy. And he still he didn't deserve to die the way that he did. And so they have to rush to get Jesus embalmed and buried so that they could do, so they did what they could, but they had to hurry because they had to do this before the Sabbath started. Now, for the Jewish people, the Sabbath is on a Saturday. That actually doesn't begin at midnight. That begins at sunset, okay? So way earlier. And so they had to hurry, all right? Because once the sun set, everything closes. You can't buy anything. You can't do any work. You can't do anything like that. So think about it. All right, they rush, they get Jesus, they put him in the tomb, everything's good, the sun is setting, all right, we got this done. What do we have in that moment? All right, like, think about it. We got a dead Jesus, all right, we got a corrupt religious system, we got a heartless empire, we got a relieved Roman governor who cannot wait to get out of Jerusalem. We got Paul, all right, we forget about Paul. Paul, he writes a bunch of our New Testament. At that point, Paul, he is not a Jesus follower. In fact, he is probably celebrating with his religious buddies that Jesus is now dead, that he won't be a problem anymore. We got Jesus, most of Jesus' followers, they have left town at this point. You got Peter, James, and John. They're still there, but they're hiding behind locked doors trying to figure out, all right, how they are going to get out of the city and trying to figure out what they're going to do next because they have no Messiah, they have no Savior, they have no hope. See, that's the thing we got to understand is that when Jesus died, hope died with him. And that's the one detail of the story that remains consistent between all four of these guys who document Jesus' life. See, Matthew, Mark, and John, they all wrote themselves into the story as cowards. See, there were no believers. There were no Jesus followers anymore. There were just nobody out there going, I'm trying to keep the Jesus dream alive. Like, there was nobody out there doing that. There were no heroes that Friday night or Saturday. And Luke tells us that even on Sunday morning, Luke says, the first day of the week, very early in the morning, it says, they came to the tomb. Now, who's they? This is the women who followed Jesus. These were Jesus followers, and these specifically are a few women that they came to the tomb bringing spices that they had prepared. Now, why are they going to the tomb? Like, what's their plan here, right? They expected Jesus to do what dead people do, which is stay dead. All right, that's what they expected. And so they got these spices. Spices were used back then to offset the smell that would be occurring right outside the tomb. And so that would kind of fix that problem. And you got to remember that just a few days before on Friday night that Joseph and Nicodemus had embalmed Jesus' body in a hurry. John gives us the detail that they actually used 75 pounds of spices for that, all right, which sounds crazy to me. Sounds like a lot, right? I don't know, some of you guys are like, some of you ladies got all kinds of spices maybe, I don't know, but 75 pounds, that's a lot. But apparently, I'm just throwing this out there, it sure looks like the women didn't think that the men did a good enough job, so they go to fix it, okay? Women, does that sound familiar? Like if the dude's in charge of the cleanup, like if the man's in charge of the cleanup, someone's got to go clean up the cleanup, like is that how it works? Okay, all right, that's what's going on here. And so Mark tells us in his account, he says that the ladies, as they're walking, they got their, you know, they're all lugging their spices and they're on their way, and that they start realizing, like, dang it, we forgot to bring the, like, I don't know, four or five guys that it would take to move the stone or move the rock that's in front of the tomb. And this stone would have been like 6 foot tall. It would have been a few hundred pounds. I mean, this is a pretty big thing. And so they are on their way and they're like, shoot, we got a problem. But Luke says that when they get there, they found the stone rolled away from the tomb, which is odd. All right, that's weird. And then they went in, but they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus either. Also weird. And they were perplexed about this. I mean, that morning, the women were expecting a dead Jesus. I mean, that's what they're expecting. They're expecting to clean up the cleanup. They are not planning on any sort of resurrection. See, I feel like for a lot of us, the way we view this morning, you know, every Easter we think about it at least once a year. You know, we're like, okay, what did this look like? It's almost like we think there's a bunch of people, maybe this is from pictures and stuff, like there's a bunch of people waiting for, you know, the lights like shine out of the rocks and it's like, oh, Jesus is risen, you know, like the sun's coming up and it's just all this crazy stuff, all right? Nobody was there. I guess there's a couple soldiers that were there, but they were asleep, so they didn't get to see any of it. But there's not like a bunch of Jesus groupies showing up in their lawn chairs with stuff for Jesus to sign, like, hey, you know, once you resurrect, I want you, you know, once you rise from the dead, I want you to sign my shirt, all right, or anything like that. There's nobody counting down. There's nobody going, okay, he said 3 days. This is the morning of the third day. Let's go. 3, 2, you're ready, Jesus. Okay, go. There's nobody there for this. See, these ladies, they're going there early. They're not looking for a miracle. They're looking for closure. The story was over. It was time to move on. Luke says, suddenly, two men stood by them in dazzling clothes. All right? Now, Luke, you got to remember, he's describing the scene as the eyewitnesses that he is interviewing describe the scene to him. And so these eyewitnesses, which are one of these ladies, or maybe a few of these ladies, right, they're saying, yeah, these like two guys in like white clothes, it was kind of crazy, right? These men, they stood there. But Matthew tells us in his account, he says, yeah, technically, sure, they look like men, but technically these guys were angels. And so these angels, they show up, and the women were terrified, which is the normal response that we've seen as much as I can remember, every single occurrence within the Bible, when we people rub shoulders with angels, all right, people start freaking out. All right, that's what happens. It's not like, oh, my buddy angel, like that doesn't happen. All right, they are terrified, which is consistent every time an angel shows up. And they bow down, they fall down to the ground. And the angel looks at him, he says, why are you looking for the living among the dead? All right, ask the men, what are you guys doing? All right, he is not here, but he has risen. Now, I don't know this for sure. This next part I'm just kind of make up because you can't read tone, okay? I don't know what the tone is with this angel. If he's like, I don't think he was mad, right? I don't think he's like scolding them. I think this angel's probably pretty pumped. I'm just saying, this is the best thing that has ever been done in the history of the universe. My guess is that the angel who angels who completely know everything that's like going on, he's like, dude, do you guys know what just happened? All right, where were you guys? You guys missed it. Like I'm saying, I bet this angel's like, hey guys, you know, he is like, they are ready. And I bet the other one's like, hey, don't rush it. Do it as we practice. You know, calm down. Just breathe a little bit. He's like, okay. All right. Hey guys, you looking for Jesus? You looking for Jesus? Yeah, guess what? Well, he's not here. He is not here. Wait, you're looking for Jesus of Nazareth, right? Like the one who died on the cross just a few days ago. That guy. All right, we're talking about the same Jesus. Okay, all right, that's cool. Yeah, he's definitely not here. Would you look around? Why don't you come on in? All right, look. Come on in here. Yeah, he was right there. He's not there anymore. He is gone. You can look over there. He's not over there. Not over here. Not over here. He didn't walk out. All right, he is just not here. Do you see him anywhere? Didn't think so. Okay, because he is not here. You know why he's not here? Yeah, well, he rose this morning. Where were you? You completely missed it. All right, and it was awesome. All right, you missed it. Don't you remember, he says, how he spoke to you when he was still in Galilee? He told you this was going to happen, and you guys completely missed it. Remember, he said, it is necessary that the Son of Man be betrayed into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, which he was, and rise on the third day. You remember that? He told you guys. And then they remembered Jesus' words. And when the women hear this, they run back to the boys to tell them, who are probably still sleeping, is early. Okay, give them a little bit of a break. It says, returning from the tomb, they reported all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. I mean, they're all like hunkered somewhere, all right? And it says Mary Magdalene, got Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them were telling the apostles these things. So they run back to the guys, and here's Luke. He's very specific. This is one of the things that I like about Luke. He is into the details. Here he is. He's like name-dropping people, all right? He's just like, hey, it's almost like he's saying, and remember, he's writing to first century people. He's writing to people who are alive during this time. It's almost like he's saying, fact check me, I dare you. Okay? You don't believe me? You don't believe this is true? I know it sounds crazy. Go ask Mary. Mary was there. She was actually the one that saw everything. All right? Why don't you go ask Joanna? Joanna was there. Or James' mom? James' mom was there too. Why don't you go ask her? All right? That's what he's doing. He's giving out these details saying, fact check me. Go ask them if you don't believe me. He says, but these words to the disciples seemed like nonsense to them, and they did not believe the women. I mean, they're all probably saying the same thing, like, dude, you had been at the wrong tomb. Right? Did you take a left on 2nd Street? Like, that, did you go the right way? Like, I think you went to the other one. Okay, no, there's a bunch of new ones that are empty over there. Right? No, you were at the wrong tomb. Somehow, which is crazy to me. Right? Up to this point, the disciples have completely missed it. All right, Jesus told them over and over and over again what was going to happen. This is what the angel's saying. The angel's just like, he told you. He told you what he was going to do, and he did it. And so why are you surprised? All right? Don't you remember? That's what the angel's saying. I mean, this is what Luke said way back. I mean, we probably talked about this like 6 months ago in Luke 9, all right, long time ago. Remember, Jesus tells his disciples, kind of gathers them all around. And he says, hey, here's the deal. I'm going to suffer many terrible things. I will be rejected by the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. Then I will be killed, all right? And then on the third day, I will be raised from the dead, all right? That's pretty specific. Do we all agree on that? All right, he just straight up tells them. And they're like, okay, yeah, Jesus, whatever you say. All right, we believe you, whatever that means. All right, and then later he says, listen to me and remember what I say. I will be betrayed into the hands of my enemies. Then later, this would have been just a few weeks before. This is in Luke 18. But a few weeks before Jesus dies, right, he gathers his disciples kind of the last time, and he gathers them, and he says, hey, listen, all right, you guys pay attention is what he's saying. They're like, okay, Jesus, we're with you. He's like, here's the plan. Are you ready? They're like, all right, we're ready, Jesus. What's the plan? You're going to be crowned king. This is going to be sweet. I'm going to get some sweet, cushy government job, get a pension. Can't wait for all this. And then he says, we are going to Jerusalem. They're like, all right, to Jerusalem. I get that. I understand that. Where all the predictions of the prophets concerning me will come true. And they're like, I have to brush up on some of that a little bit, but it's all going to be good. I know that. And then Jesus says, meaning I will be handed over to the Romans, and I will be mocked, treated shamefully, and spit upon, and then they will flog me and whip me and kill me, but on the third day I will rise again. Right? Pretty specific, right? We all agree with this? And he tells them this over and over and over again. What is going to happen? Basically, it's just like, I'm going to die. You get it? They're going to kill me. You understand? All right, like, I will be dead, but I'll be back 3 days later, so it's cool. He says, I'm going to die, but I'll be back. I'm dying soon, but I'll see you in 3 days. All right, I'm going to die, but I'll be gone for 3 days. Okay, I hope you understand. Over and over and over again. And then he dies. And the disciples are like, wow, that was so unexpected. And they're like, well, that wasn't supposed to happen. Well, I guess dead people don't come back, so this story is over. And so here's these ladies. They're telling the disciples, they're like, dude, you guys, it happened. I'm pretty sure I haven't seen Jesus, not 100%, but I saw some angels. This is what they said, so I'm pretty sure I can believe them. And when Peter hears this, he doesn't believe. But he got up and he ran to the tomb. Now, John gives us a specific detail. I feel like I got to mention, right, because John would want us to know. He says that he also ran to the tomb once Peter started running. John's like, well, I'm running too. And he runs, and he actually passes Peter up, and he gets to the tomb first. John tells us that several times. He says, hey, I just want to let everybody know for all time that I am faster than Peter again. It's not just once. I think it's at least twice, maybe three times he says that. Okay? Everybody knows that. So that's the detail that John throws in. And he also calls himself the disciple whom Jesus loved. So, you know, that's John. Anyway, it says, when Peter got there, he stooped to look in, and he saw only the linen cloths lying there. Now, Mark gives us a specific detail. Mark says that Jesus had it all nice and neatly folded at the end of it, okay, or at the end of, like, the bed where he was laying, right, which is nice, right? All you moms would appreciate that, right? All right, okay, all right. This is a total mom move, but nobody cares about that, I guess, all right? Anyway, so Peter, he went away amazed at what had happened. All right, so the disciples, they don't know what to think. John tells us it was in this moment, once they see the empty tomb and they see how everything was like all nice, it wasn't like somebody stole the body, they folded up the stuff and they put it right. You know, once they see that, John tells us that Peter and John, that's when they start to believe. But the rest don't. Luke says that now that same day, two of them, these guys weren't actually part of Jesus' 12 dudes that he hung out with, right? These were part of a broader group. It says they were on their way to a village called Emmaus, which Luke says was about 7 miles from Jerusalem. He says together they were discussing everything that had taken place, because there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot that went down that weekend. And while they were discussing and arguing, Jesus himself came near them and began to walk along with them. but they were prevented from recognizing him. Okay, so we can all picture this. They're kind of walking down the road, right? They're arguing, they're talking amongst themselves. Here comes this random stranger. It's actually Jesus. They just don't recognize Jesus. He must look different. And Jesus asks him, he says, hey, what's this dispute? What's the conversation you guys are having with each other as you guys are walking? And they stopped in their tracks and they looked at him. And Luke says they looked discouraged. Why? Because their main man had just died. Right, because Jesus, the one, their Savior, who thought they thought was going to be their Savior, was gone. The dream was over. Their friend had died. And one of them, named Cleopas, he answered him. He's like, you serious right now? He says, are you the only visitor in Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that happened there in these days? He's like, you don't know what's going on? It's like, where have you been, man? All right, have you been living underneath a rock? And Jesus probably like, kind of, right? Actually, see, what could Jesus have said in that moment, right? Think about it. Actually, I am the only one who knows what's going on here, right? Like, I know all this. What could he have said? He could have said, I am the only one who knows what it feels like to die for the world. I am the only one who knows what it feels like to beat death. Instead, you know what Jesus says? Jesus says, what things? Now, I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of us out there. Where are my 90s kids at? Grew up in the 90s. Like me, okay, all right, appreciate that, okay. Mr. Lutz, I see you back there. Okay, there we go. He didn't raise his hand. I don't like it when people don't play, okay. Anyway, there we go. Oh, he's reading his Bible. All right, yeah, whatever. Okay, that's good. But anyway, I picture this like The Sandlot. We've all seen that movie at some point. Okay, thank you. Okay, it's like The Sandlot when you got Smalls and Benny, he's introducing Smalls, who knows nothing about baseball or any, you know, or any baseball players or anything. He introduces them to the team, right? And they're all kind of sitting around outside of a grocery store, I think. They're drinking their pops and stuff. And who are they talking about? They're talking about the great Bambino, remember? And so he goes, and what Smalls do? Because he's an idiot, all right? He's just like, who's that? You know? And I'm not calling Jesus an idiot here. I'm just saying this is kind of what Jesus is doing, is he's just like, what thinks? All right? He's playing into it. And remember the guys in the Sandlot, they're just like, who's that? They're just like, the great Bambino. Like, they cannot believe that he's never heard of that guy. And that's what these guys, they're like, are you serious? What things? You don't know what we're talking about? The things concerning Jesus of Nazareth, you ever heard of him? He's kind of like a local legend here. Okay, everybody knows of Jesus. He was a prophet, powerful in action and speech before God and all the people. That guy, you heard of him? Is this starting to ring a bell for you, man? He says, and then our chief priests, you know what they did? And our leaders, they handed him over to be sentenced to death, and then they crucified him. You don't know anything about this. You haven't heard any of that, but we were hoping, but that hope's gone, that he was the one who was about to redeem Israel that the Old Testament promised us. And besides all this, it's the third day, which is kind of crazy. And check this out. Since these things happened, moreover, some women from our group astounded us. Because this morning they arrived early at the tomb. And when they didn't find his body, they came and they reported that they had seen like a vision of angels. I'm not quite sure what happened. What do you think? I don't know. It's like a vision of angels. Maybe they actually talked to a couple angels. We're not 100% sure. But they said that he was alive. And some of those who were with us, they went to the tomb and they found it just as the women had said, but they didn't see him. They're like, it's a crazy story. I know what's crazy is they don't realize that they're talking about Jesus to Jesus. All right? A little embarrassing. And the question is, how is Jesus going to respond? And Jesus says to him, he says, how foolish are you? It's almost like he's saying, didn't you pay attention in class? Like, this is the whole point of the whole thing, right? Right? When Jesus is dying, right? He's like, you guys are idiots, is basically what he's saying. Come on, guys. Like, how slow you are to believe all that the prophets have spoken within the Old Testament. How slow you are to believe what the Bible has to say. He says, wasn't it necessary for the Messiah to suffer these things and enter into his glory? Isn't that what the Old Testament says? Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, basically from the beginning of the Old Testament to the end, he interpreted for them the things concerning himself in all the scriptures. See, Jesus doesn't show up to these guys and say, ta-da, you know, or hey, boys, how's it going? He doesn't do that. That's not what Jesus does. What he does is he takes them through the Bible. He takes them to God's words, and he marches them through the entire Old Testament with these guys, and he tells them what it means. And basically what he's saying all of it in general, all this points to the Messiah who is going to come and was going to suffer. And what's crazy is at this moment, they still don't know that they're hanging out with Jesus. Like, they still don't get it. It's still not clicking in their heads. And so they keep walking, and they came near a village where they were going, and Jesus gave the impression that he was going farther, that he was going to continue down the road. But they urged him. They're like, hey, man, it's getting dark out. All right, stay with us because it's almost evening, and now the day is almost over. And so Jesus is like, okay. And so he went in to stay with them in Emmaus, the town. And it was as he reclined at the table with them that he took the bread and he blessed it and he broke it and he gave it to them. Then their eyes were open and they finally recognized him. They're like looking at each other like, oh snap, it's Jesus. But he disappeared from their sight. Poof, he's gone, right? Which has me thinking, I'm not saying Jesus was messing with them, but I'm just saying, no explanation. He's just like, you get it, okay, time's up, I gotta go, got things to do. And he's just gone, right? And so they said to each other, they're like, okay, like this, that was weird. And they're like, weren't our hearts burning within us while he was talking with us on the road and explaining the scriptures to us? It's starting to click. They're like, so that's how he knew his Bible so well. Now it all makes sense. He knew that stuff way more than us. And that very hour, they got up and they ran back to Jerusalem, the 7 miles, and they found the 11 and those with them. They are still gathered together. And John tells us that they are still John tells us that they're still behind locked doors and they're still in hiding, these guys. They're still scared. And when these two guys, Cleopas and these two guys, enter into the room, right, the whole group of people, they're like, Cleopas, you won't understand, or you won't believe it. The Lord has truly been raised, just like the girls this morning said, and he has appeared to Simon, who is Peter, okay? And so these guys are like, guess what? Peter saw Jesus, or at least Peter claims to see Jesus. And I think these guys are probably the biggest one-uppers there are in the history of one-upping. Okay, we all know what that is, all right? When you got something cool and you tell somebody and they're like, well, I did something better than you, and they one-up you, okay? That's what I think these guys did, or at least they had the perfect opportunity. They're like, oh, okay, Peter got to see Jesus for like 5 minutes. That's cool. Well, we hiked with him all day, and then we had a one-on-one tutoring session with him, and then we rounded out the evening with a nice dinner together, okay? Like, that's definitely a one-up than Peter. And so they tell him that. And he says, they begin to describe what had happened on the road and how he was made known to them. And Mark tells us the disciples, or most of them, at least the majority of them, still don't believe. They're still like, psh, yeah, right. You, the women, Peter, you guys are all making this stuff up. And then as these two guys are telling the disciples, right, kind of the play-by-play of the afternoon that they had with Jesus, right, Jesus himself stood in their midst, and he just says, peace to you, all right? Basically, he's saying, everybody just calm down, chill, okay? It's all good. But they were startled, and they were terrified, meaning they're freaking out. Then Jesus just poofs. He just shows up, and they thought they were seeing a ghost, which kind of makes sense. And Jesus looks at him. He's like, why are you troubled? Why are you guys freaking out? All right, everybody just needs to calm down. He says, and why do doubts arise in your hearts? Like, why are you doubting me? Here I am. I'm standing in front of you. He says, look at my hands. Check out my feet. That it is I myself. You want, touch me. And I think they're all like, no, I'm not touching you, Jesus. All right. And Jesus is like, no, touch my hand. All right. Touch me. I'm not a ghost. Touch me and see, because a ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you can see I have. A ghost doesn't have a body. And having said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. But while they still were amazed, and they're still in disbelief, Jesus is standing right in front of them. And they're like, I watched you die. I watched you die a gruesome death. There's no way you could come back from that. And so he asked them, he's like, all right, I'm not a ghost. I'm for real. You got anything to eat? And they gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it, and he ate it in their presence. He's eating fish going, does this prove it? All right, I'm eating in front of you. Now, do you believe? See, the thing that I like about what Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John have to say when they give us or tell us the story of Jesus is that they didn't write themselves in as heroes. I mean, picture Luke here. As Luke is interviewing these guys, he's trying to figure out once and for all what happened. He wants the most accurate account. And he's interviewing Jesus' close friends. And they tell him the truth. They wrote themselves in as deniers and doubters who ran at the first sign of trouble, who abandoned Jesus when Jesus needed the most. These guys who spent the last few years with Jesus, they had failed to believe and they had failed to understand and they had failed to pay attention to what Jesus had told them was going to happen. And Luke wants us to know that. See, it's the greatest story in the history of the world. He came back. Death could not hold him. Jesus really lived. He died. He came back. And that changed human history. And Luke went through a lot of effort and time to record and document this event to us. And I feel like it's Luke trying to say, he's like, hey, I know this sounds crazy. I know this sounds unbelievable. I know this sounds impossible. I know it sounds like a fairy tale. It sounds too good to be true. And nobody that was there believed that it could happen, and nobody believed that it would happen until it did. And the question you have to wrestle down is Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John reliable accounts of actual events? Because I'm just saying if. Just throw this out there. If. That's your decision. But if Matthew, Mark, or John, who were probably, we know Matthew and John were, and probably Mark was there as well. If they truly saw Jesus alive after they watched him die a gruesome death, like if Luke truly investigated, if he truly tracked down the eyewitnesses and sat down with them and had the conversations and asked the tough questions so that he could tell the story, like if Jesus really did come back, if it really was the single greatest event in the history of the world, something that changed the world, and here we are 2,000 years later still talking about it, like if it is true, man, then you should lean in and you should pay attention because it changes everything. We're going to wrap this up next week. Let's pray. God, we thank you for everything that you've given us. We thank you for this, telling us what happened. And thank you for Luke putting in the work to make that happen. God, we thank you most of all that you came down, you took off your glory. You came down here to the dirt to live among us. And then we ended up putting you to death. And on top of that, you held our sin on your shoulders and you paid for it. And it cost you. God, we thank you for that. We can never repay you in any way. God, if there's anybody who hasn't given their life to you, that they would decide to do that today based on what you did for us. Lord, we thank you again. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.